Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. A white Prince George's County police officer is under indictment charged with assault and misconduct in office in connection with an incident involving a black teenager last October. Well, tonight we're going to talk about that incident and other law and order issues in the county with County State's Attorney Aisha Brave Boy. She is on the line with us right now, and lines are open. If you have comments or questions, give us a call right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. County State's Attorney Aisha Brave Boy, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
So let me first start with this indictment concerning Corporal Darryl Warmoth. He is, as I said, he is charged with first and second degree assault, misconduct in office. Apparently, there was an incident involving a black teenager last October. Can you talk to me about that?
Well, I can't go into detail on the incident. What I can say is what I said at the press conference earlier today. We believe, and there are credible allegations, that Officer Warmoth grabbed the teen by the neck and assaulted the teen while the teen was in handcuffs. And as a result, my office worked with the Prince George's County Police Department to conduct an investigation. We presented our evidence to a grand jury, and yesterday the grand jury indicted on first-degree assault, second-degree assault, and misconduct in office.
Mm. It's been reported that two officers reported this incident back in October. Officer Warmoth is white. The officers who reported him are both African-American. Is that correct?
That is my understanding. That is correct.
So talk to me about this very issue, because over the past handful of years, there's been a lot of discussion about officers standing up and pointing out what they see as wrongdoing. Can you reflect on that a bit?
You know, I am so proud of the officers who came forward. They did their job. They are sworn to uphold the law and to protect our communities, even if it's from other officers, which in this case, they did their duty, and it was another officer who is now the defendant in this case. But they did their job. We have one set of laws, and they apply to everyone. And so I know that this year in the General Assembly, they passed just sweeping legislation around police reform. And one of the changes that will go into effect in 2022 is this training and this requirement of duty to report. And in this case, our officers didn't need that legislation to go into effect in order to do their jobs, which is to report. You know, I hoped coming in to create an environment where our officers, our good officers, knew that if they reported these types of incidents, they would be investigated, and that if charges were appropriate, those charges would be brought. I have a public integrity unit that is headed by Renee Joy, who is an excellent attorney who, you know, investigates these cases. Works with me because she reports directly to me to make decisions on charging. And it is a tough job because, of course, officers do have the duty also to protect our communities, and they have the right and the ability to use force that is necessary and reasonable. But when they use unnecessary or unreasonable force, especially when they are committing a crime against one of our residents, the other officers have a duty to report that, just like they have a duty to report any other crime that they see. So I'm just, again, very grateful to those officers who came forward. I'm grateful that my office has a great working relationship with the Internal Affairs Department, and that officers know that we are going to do our job. And so, you know, in this case, their testimony, the evidence that they provided was critical in us securing this indictment.
But let me ask you something. As you said, it's the officers' responsibility, indeed their jobs, to protect the community. But in the case of these two officers who witnessed this incident, who is going to protect them? I don't think that it is a stretch to say that there is still a blue wall, the circling of wagons when these kinds of things happen within the rank and file. And if these two officers, doing the right thing, as you say, may begin to receive a look askance from other officers. And indeed, we have been hearing reports that they may not have the backing of other rank and file officers in the field. Are you not concerned about their safety and welfare in the day-to-day work that they do moving forward?
Absolutely. I am very concerned. And I know that we have a new police chief coming in, Chief Malik Aziz, and these are the issues that I will be talking about with him. But what I want, you know, those officers to know is that if they are retaliated against, you know, come to our office, let us know. Certainly we will work with the department to ensure that they are protected as much as possible. But, you know, my office is an independent office for a reason. We work along with our police department and other public safety agencies to investigate crimes and to hold individuals accountable. But we also have an independent duty to really oversee what happens within our department as well, to ensure that other crimes aren't being committed. And so things like retaliation, we are concerned about that. And we have, you know, an obligation to ensure that those who come forward, who do the right thing, are protected from retaliation and from bad acts.
Do you have any idea what that protection would look like?
Well, you know, it really depends on, you know, what those officers believe the threat or the concern is. And so without having a more specific knowledge or information from them directly, it's really hard to say. But just know that we are committed to working to protect our officers. It's extremely important that they do the right thing, and that other officers know that they will also be protected if they do the right thing. So it's something that the department has to certainly work on, something that our office is interested in. And we also have law enforcement partners, including the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI and other means to investigate any claims of retaliation that we won't be afraid to use.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about law and order issues. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jackie, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would just like to say that the police force in Prince George's County has been notorious for their abuse of African-American citizens for as long as I've been alive. There's an incident where they beat a friend of my mother's who was in her 70s at the time, a female, beat her unconscious for a traffic violation. So the question becomes, will these investigations be retroactive? Will they go back and investigate incidents that have occurred over the decades against African-American citizens in Prince George's County, which, by the way, has historically had the highest statistics of membership of the Ku Klux Klan for many, many years? So that's my question or comment.
Jackie, thank you so much for your question. State's Attorney.
Well, certainly we are interested in any case where our Prince George's County police officers or any other law enforcement agency that operates within our jurisdiction has there's alleged wrongdoing against members of our department. However, we are limited also by the law, and so statute of limitations apply to certain types of offenses. So it really depends on the type of offense that is alleged, but to the extent that we are able to investigate and move forward and statute of limitations are not an issue for us, you know, we don't mind moving forward with those cases. I mean, we are right now looking at cold cases, murders that are cold cases, as well as sexual assaults that are cold cases, because the statute of limitations don't apply to those cases. And so the same to me would be used, or that same analysis can be used for police-involved cases, but we are limited by the statute of limitations in some instances. But what I would say is report it, come forward. Let's see what we have to work with. Oftentimes, also in older cases, we sometimes have witnesses available, sometimes evidence isn't available. My office can only bring charges if we credibly believe that we can prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. That is our ethical obligation. But we are happy to review and investigate and advise the alleged victims of any options that our office might have to pursue any claims that they have.
We are
open.
Speaking of proving a case beyond a reasonable doubt, it has also been reported that you have a list of police officers who have ethical issues, maybe problem officers and the like, and that you are trying to, and correct me if I'm wrong, trying to prevent these questionable officers from testifying in criminal trials. Is that correct?
Well, who testifies in criminal cases is determined by the state. So what we have determined is that there are certain officers whose credibility is so questionable, whether it is due to false statements that they may have made or racial bias or prejudice, that we decided that we no longer want to sponsor them as witnesses. Now, information on these officers have always been made available to defense counsel through the discovery process. So through discovery, we are required to turn over what's called Brady information or exculpatory or impeachment evidence. So that has always been a requirement of the state. So these officers, many of them who are on our list, are officers who have always historically had information turned over to defense counsel during the discovery process. But as we look at reform, right, it's not just about police, it's about the entire criminal justice system, including the prosecutor's office. And I want to send the message that credibility and integrity is important. And so there were certain officers that we just decided we could no longer sponsor. And that's a decision we made earlier this year. We did notify the administration and the police department, and they took steps, to their credit, they took steps to remove those officers from having a duty that was where they would interact or interface with the public.
But if I may ask, State's Attorney, a couple of things. If that information is always available to the defense, what is the purpose of the list?
Well, so the information on those officers was turned over to the defense because we were using those officers as witnesses. So for, I guess, since 1963, I think it was 1963 when Brady versus Maryland was decided, it was determined through that U.S. Supreme Court case that prosecutors were required to turn over this Brady or exculpatory impeachment material. So that has always been a requirement. So since that time, prosecutors before me and certainly prosecutors after me will be required to turn over any information that tends to discredit a state witness and or tends to prove the innocence of the defendant. That is always a requirement. We just took it a step further. So we're just taking our requirement and our duty a step further in saying that there are certain officers that we just don't want to sponsor any longer because we must send the message that your credibility is important. See, when we turn over this information, part of the case becomes about the credibility of the officer and not the underlying case. And so we want to bring forward cases that are strong, where it's about the case and not the officer investigating or making the arrest in the case. And that's just a decision I made.
I need to take a break, but I want to follow up on that because I think this is a really important issue. And I want to make sure that we're clear about this initiative, this, as you say, taking this step a bit further and what that means. We also want to let Dwight from D.C. know that we're going to be talking to you. Also, T. Phillips from Prince George's County, stay on the line. We're going to be talking to you as well. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about several law and order issues. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. I want to go back to this this Brady list that you have taken, as you say, a bit further in not sponsoring police officers who may be questionable in their ethics or other issues and keeping them off the stand in trials. As you probably heard, for example, in Fairfax County, there was a D.C. firefighter who spent more than 2 years in prison because a Fairfax County police officer lied about information compiled during the course of his arrest. That officer is now under investigation. He is no longer on the force. The firefighter has been released. Are you concerned that if there are officers that, as you say, you no longer sponsor as witnesses because of troubling information about them, moving forward, that there may be information that gives concern to past cases where there have been convictions?
Well, again, the obligation for the state to provide the information that leads to their credibility issues always is provided to defense counsel. That is the obligation of the state. And so defense counsel can use that information to discredit the witness. That is the process that is used all across this country in cases brought by the state. There's an obligation of the state to provide this information. The state provides it to the defense counsel, and the defense counsel then uses that information when it on cross-examination of the witness. That is typical, right? What I would say is that, you know, we have an obligation, too, to consider a case. And so oftentimes we will look at whether or not there is body camera footage that corroborates the statement of the officer or other witnesses that might corroborate the statements of an officer. So whether or not the officer has credibility issues, there may still be enough information to move forward with the case credibly. However, the information about that officer, despite the fact that there may be corroborating information that corroborates the testimony of that that officer, despite that, the obligation is still to turn that information over. So we have done that, and the state has done that. My predecessors have done it. I certainly have done it. But as we look at ways to reform our system, as we look at creating a fairer and better system for our residents, what we cannot do, is continue to tolerate individuals in our department bringing cases where their credibility is still an issue. And so we have decided that there are certain officers whose credibility we can't stand behind, and so we don't want them testifying in our cases.
So let me try one more time. I really, because this is a really big issue, and I think it's a really important thing. If you've taken an additional step, you talked about what happened in 1963. I got that. This is 2021. You said you did this earlier this year. So now you've taken an additional step to make it. To question, you know, this, you know, if the officer has marks on him about credibility pre 2021, now there's another one brought by your office. Even if you believe that the person who has been charged is guilty, you know it as a prosecutor, but now one of the officers, or maybe even the only officer, to testify in this, if that credibility is questionable, are you concerned that you could lose a case and put somebody perhaps back on the street?
And that's exactly why we're taking this additional step. And okay. So what we have done is we have dismissed cases brought by those officers who we no longer sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So those cases were dismissed so that we don't have that credibility issue, and those defendants will not have to face their day in court, right? And it's because of the officer's credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just have to set a standard.
Mm-hmm.
We have to set a high standard. That's what Prince Georgians want. That is what I'm going to deliver to them. And we've taken a huge step in that direction. And I'm very proud that my office was the first to make this move. And my hope is that my colleagues around the state and in other states will make this move as well. Because we are all held to a standard. You cannot be in my position or work in my office and have a credibility issue. Because I've got to trust that you're going to perform your duty on behalf of the residents of the county that I love, who elected me. I have to believe that you can do your job in a with the utmost ethical and standards and high with high ethical standards. If I don't believe that, then you can't work for me. Similarly, if officers are not conducting themselves credibly, then they can't testify for me. They can't testify on behalf of the state. They can't testify on behalf of the people of Prince George's County. That I believe that that's what I owe my residents, and that's what we're doing.
Should they remain on the force if that's the case?
You know, that's the decision of the police department. I have made my position clear. They understand that. They have taken the appropriate steps to remove those officers from having positions where they would generate cases or would potentially be witnesses in cases. But that is the decision, I believe, that when our new police chief comes in, Malik Aziz, he will make those decisions, and I will respect whatever decision he makes.
I appreciate your patience with my penetrating questions. so let me go back to the back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. T. Phillips, thanks for holding on, calling from Prince George's County. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Yes, go right ahead, please, quickly.
Okay, so I had a crisis with my son, and I needed to get him to the hospital. This happened in December of 2019. I called 911 for assistance. The officers came, and they knew that I was trying to get him to the hospital. My reward for calling for their assistance was get my son to the hospital was that they handcuffed him, put their knee in his back, pulled him by his hair, put his face into the glass of the back of the car. When I tried to get the officers to calm down, one of the officers pushed me in my chest 3 times. When I attempted to record what was going on, he stepped in front of the camera to prevent me from video recording. But there are videos from the gas station area where all of this took place. I actually had to call 911 on the police because of them being using excessive force and being brutal with my son. He wasn't charged with anything. He wasn't arrested. He was simply taken to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. A state's attorney, your thoughts about what Ms. Phillips is sharing with us?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about what Ms. Phillips is sharing with us, and I definitely want her to reach out to our office. So I'm going to give you quickly an email address for my chief of staff, Judy Danso. It's JSDANSO.
Hold on, please. Just a second. And I want you to know I also filed an official complaint with the Internal Affairs, and the Internal Affairs investigator recommended that the officers be charged.
Let's get that email address again, please, if we can, State's Attorney.
Absolutely. It's JSDANSO at CO, as in counties, so at co.pg.md.us.
JSD as in dog, ANSO at co.pg.md.us. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
So if you send an email to my chief of staff, if you send it tonight, we'll reach out to you tomorrow and we will follow up with the department on that case.
Do you want to hear it again, Ms. Phillips?
JSDANSO at co.pg.us.
co.pg.md.us.
Great. Thank you. I got it, and I will send the email as soon as I get inside the house.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call.
I appreciate you, too. Thank you.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dwight calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dwight. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having me on this platform.
Sure.
I do want to speak to the state attorney, ask the state attorney, because I want to revisit. She said something about the two officers getting protection on a case-by-case basis, dependent upon the threat. One of the things that concerned me is that the morale of future officers coming forward for whatever reason, because we're in real time. So tomorrow, if an incident happens, and they don't see a model or best practice where they can feel encouraged to come forward, that could be very telling on why many of them may not come forward. So I just want to ask, is there a time frame for a model to be put together where a visual model or best practices where officers can feel comfortable knowing that there is a process in place to secure them if they do come forward for whatever reason?
You know, that's a great question. And what I will say is that Prince George's County Police, you know, they're going through right now a lot of changes. As you may know, we have a new chief starting, Chief Malik Aziz, on May 9th. We also, the county will be hiring a new director for public safety for the county that will oversee the police department. So I think there is a recognition that things must and will change. And so I look forward to working with our new police chief to develop such a model. Certainly the police department does not work directly under me. We work together to address cases and to protect our community. But we also have a role to play as the state's attorney's office. We are an independent arm, and we have relationships with other authorities that if officers don't feel protected through their department, which we hope that they would, but if they don't, they can contact us, and we will work with them to ensure that they get the resources that they need. But I think through working with our new police chief, and he is very experienced. He's worked in Dallas, and so they've had a number of challenges in Dallas, so he is familiar with the complexities in these large departments. And so I look forward to working with him to develop such a model. And thank you so much for pointing that out, because we do want to create a safe space for officers to feel like they can do the right thing, and there will not be retaliation. They actually should be rewarded because they are protecting, really, the profession. They are professional police officers. They are doing their duty. And the department should celebrate that, should uplift these officers. And the department has a huge role to play in protecting officers who come forward and do the right thing. So again, as we move forward with our new police chief, I'll work hand in hand with him to develop that model. However, right now, if officers feel like they are being retaliated against, if they need to reach out to us, they are more than welcome to do so.
Dwight, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking with Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about law and order issues in the county. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810. Ray, calling from Southeast D.C. Ray, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So what was on my mind, Harold, you answered my question for me. I was going to ask if the officers were so bad, why was they still on the force? But I heard a response, so now I have another question.
Sure, go ahead.
You said that you work with the police and not for them, that it's up to the chief to decide if they should stay on the force or not. But if their record or their integrity is so bad that you can lose cases or you don't no longer want them to testify for you, why you don't bring charges up on them and stuff? Because I'm quite sure their record's got to be bad enough that there's got to be charges on them. That's a question.
Well, yes, go right ahead.
That's a good question. Well, oftentimes with these cases, because they are historical cases, I mentioned the statute of limitations, so sometimes because a lot of these officers have been on a list of officers who had credibility issues for so long, some close to 20 years, that we may not be able to pursue those charges now. But what we can do is we can set a new standard, and that is what we're doing. So I understand your frustration. I have it as well.
That's why people still getting killed, though. That's why, because nobody takes a step.
Hold on, Ray. Let her finish, please. Go right ahead.
I hear you. You're absolutely right. There has been a culture of tolerance. There has been. We understand that. And that's why I'm setting a new standard. So I can't correct all of the wrongs of the past. All I can do is make the future better. And that's what we're doing. To the extent that there are charges that could potentially be brought, we wouldn't mind bringing them. But again, a lot of these incidents with these officers are historical. They've happened years and years ago. Statute of limitations have run. And we can't pursue those any charges at this time. But what we can do is say, you are no longer able to be sponsored by the state, you're not going to testify on our cases. And again, I think to the credit of the department, when we sent that list, when we told them what our intentions were, they took steps to take those officers off the streets, and we applaud them for that.
Okay. Ray, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your phone call. I do want to move on to another issue, and this is less about police and more about prosecution and social justice. As you are well aware, recreational marijuana in the District of Columbia has been decriminalized for, you know, quite some time. It's legal.
It's legal. Yeah,
it's legal. And there are moves in individual states and a lot of discussion about even federal laws for the decriminalization of marijuana. And yet, as you know, there are a lot of people, including young black men, who remain behind bars for marijuana-related crimes. Is there any... Forgive my, you know, my poor choice of words, but can they get a redo? Because as we have seen, attitudes and laws are changing.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that in Prince George's County, we no longer prosecute for minor possession of marijuana. We made that decision almost 2 years ago, and that has been the policy of our office. And so when we see those cases, which we're seeing fewer and fewer of because the department knows that we're not prosecuting those cases, we do dismiss those cases. We also have a motion that we have filed in our district court to expunge the records of a number of individuals who had marijuana convictions on their records, because it's no longer considered a crime to even possess less than 10 grams of marijuana in the state of Maryland. That has been decriminalized now since 2014. And so we are waiting to have our day in court, in district court, to see if we can get those convictions, well, actually not even expunged. We're asking to have those convictions struck so that they are no longer on the records of members of our community who deserve to have a clean slate. So we look forward to the district court setting those motions in, and we are very hopeful that we can get that done pretty soon. They've been pending in court for about a year now, but we know the courts have been moving slow because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But we're hopeful that over the next month or so that we can get those cases set in.
Do you believe that people who are currently behind bars for marijuana crimes that may not be major but under previous laws enough to put them behind bars, do you think they should be released?
And, you know, absolutely. When it comes to individuals who have, let's say, been convicted of, drug dealing, mm-hmm. It's for the most part, I think that under the Obama administration, at least at the federal level, those individuals, there's a number of individuals who were released. So I think we have a lot of those marijuana drug dealers who received lengthy sentences. I think most of those individuals have been released. In the state of Maryland, we don't have, a large number of individuals who are convicted of just drug offenses that are serving lengthy sentences. To the extent that we might have some, we certainly would support a sentence reduction or release. And we have been working through my Conviction and Sentencing Integrity Unit to identify those cases where we can request that the court reduce the length of a sentence. And this isn't just true for drug crimes. It's also true for other types of offenses. And we have been pretty successful in getting the court to reconsider sentences, lengthy sentences, for members of our community who deserve a second chance. Mm.
I want to talk to you about financial scams, which is something that you've been talking about recently. From your perspective, what is the status of the kinds of financial scams that we have seen impacting county residents, particularly the elderly? Have we seen more? Is this part of the pandemic? How would you characterize that?
Well, I think we have always seen individuals who were preying upon the elderly. Oftentimes it's caregivers, or unfortunately many times it's relatives, whether it's their son, daughter, niece, grandchild. It is really a shame that people take advantage of people who really built this country, our super seniors, you know, really have made the difference for so many of us. And how do some of us repay them? We repay them by trying to steal their money, their life savings. And so we have several cases that my office has tried and has been successful in holding these individuals accountable. But the problem is oftentimes, you know, people have spent the money. So getting restitution is a huge problem often for our victims. And so we have been trying to get out the message around, you know, appointing through the courts, you know, a guardian ad litem to work with our seniors so that they have to bring, like, you know, the accounts of the seniors, the financial decisions that are being made on behalf of our seniors, bringing them into court on a quarterly basis or a year or an annual basis, just to ensure that whoever is responsible for the financial well-being of our seniors, that they are doing so with integrity. So we're working with all of our community partners to get out that message. But yeah, we have seen, unfortunately, a number of cases involving caregivers as well as family members. In addition to that, the other thing that we see are people who are claiming that they are home improvement experts and they're coming to our seniors' homes. They're telling them that they can make their homes brand new, look brand new, and they're leaving them in financial ruin, as well as their homes are in ruin. So, you know, making sure that when seniors are getting home improvement work done on their homes, that they have a trusted friend or relative that they are conferring with and helping them make decisions, because we've seen that happen as well. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, the scams continue, but we're on top of it.
In reference to that, I mean, you did speak about, you know, prosecuting those who have committed these crimes, but I wanted to make sure I understood. Is there something that would be user-friendly for seniors when they are concerned about perhaps someone in their family or caretakers who they may be suspicious of?
Absolutely. Well, they can always call the county's 311 system. That system connects them directly to all county services. And so we have social service departments, we have family services, we have other agencies within county government that can help direct our seniors if they feel like they are being a victim, being victimized either physically or financially. And so we are committed to our seniors. And if they call that 311 number, they will be directed to the appropriate agency.
I want to ask you about politics. As you may know, former Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker has discussed dipping his toe into the water of the gubernatorial race for Maryland, and already that is a rather crowded field. But what about yourself? Are you planning on running for county executive when the election season begins to kick off?
You know, I am running for re-election to the Office of State's Attorney. I love this job. And it's really where I believe I'm doing, you know, my life's work, you know, working to reform our justice system, working to give juvenile lifers a second chance, which, let me tell you, we have been able to work to restore 11 juvenile lifers, and we have, I think, 8 more motions pending and dozens more in the works. So we are really excited about that work that we're doing. I'm looking at what I'm doing around public integrity and ensuring that our police department is moving in the right direction. We're doing important work there, holding our officers accountable. You know, we've had 3 convictions so far. since I've been elected state's attorney. We had a plea, and then we had two trials that ended in convictions, one on assault and the other on a sexual assault, where a police officer sexually assaulted another police officer. The fact that that police officer who was assaulted came forward and stuck with us through a very tough and demanding trial. The fact that that officer did that, I think, was a result of the professionalism and the care that I've brought to this office around holding officers accountable. And so, you know, there's so much more I'm working on. Like we have an emerging adult program that we're that we've just begun to kick off, and we're working with our state Department of Public Safety and Corrections to really provide pathways to reduce sentences and incarceration of those who are in our state system by them entering into our new emerging adult program. We have a pilot with about 13 to 15 people right now, but once we know it's successful, we're going to expand that beyond that number. But we have young people who are in our prisons, and I'm not talking about juveniles, I'm talking about young adults, 18 through 26, who are in our prisons, some on very serious offenses, but who deserve and need a second chance, and who need career development, who need personal development, who need a mentor and a sponsor. And we're providing all of that through our emerging adult program. So that's just taking shape now. So I have a lot more that I want to do. We've done great work around victim advocacy. I mean, we are starting right now to develop a new strangulation protocol for our county. We are just beginning now to address the backlog of sexual assault or rape kits that we have. And so we're working with our partners to do that so that we can bring some justice to victims who have not had their sexual assault kits tested in the past. So we're doing a lot of great work. And honestly, I love the work that I'm doing. So I am trying to seek re-election.
So that's a no for now.
The no for now. Oh, yes, I say all that to say.
No.
I am seeking my current office.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Prince George's County State's Attorney, Aisha Brayboy. Thank you so very, very much. I'm sure you're going to be watching the president's speech tonight. I'm sure he's going to be talking about police reform and social justice as well. We're looking forward to that as well. Thank you again for spending some time with
us. Thank you.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, April 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.